And tonight, at the dawn of a new decade, we'll hear from women in the aqua business. And we'll also have the last part of Tammy Flavin's journey around Ireland by kayak. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been looking into the archives in Seascapes back over its 30-year history. The programme was first broadcast in 1989, and what was remarkable about listening to early programmes was how few women were involved in the whole marine sector. That's changing, thankfully. IT Carlow offers a higher diploma in aqua business based in its Wexford campus. It has many women graduates and students. Lorna Siggins went along and met two graduates.
Imagine having a great idea for a seafood business but not quite knowing how to set it up. Well, IT Carlow might help you. It's been running a highly successful higher diploma in aqua business designed by Dick Bates from a very well-known fishing family and based in Wexford. It has two awards on the course, named after great fishing industry leaders, Joey Murren from Killybegs and Brendan O'Kelly, former chief executive of BIM. I spoke to two recent graduates, Kate Dempsey from an Arklow fishing family who runs the Irish Mussel Seed Company, and Mary Myler from County Wexford, who set up Ocean Leaves, which supplies wild organic seaweed fertiliser to garden centres. And Kate told me first how she got involved.
Yeah, I had applied for an aquaculture licence when I was 24, and I studied law first. And while I was waiting on my licence, which can take quite a long time, I worked in several roles. I was a legal executive and worked teaching, and then I worked in the guards for a couple of years as well. But my licence is through now, so I'm no longer working for the guards. Honestly, when I left school, I was kind of told that fishing wasn't for women. Although I loved where I was from, I loved the sea, and I grew up really in that industry. And it's only when I realised that aquaculture was a possibility for women, you know, it's much more automated, it's not that heavy lifting as you might have in fishing, that I thought, well, maybe that is a route for me. So when I left school, I studied law not knowing what to do. And it just happened to come in handy as I progressed through my career that I had that in the background. But yeah, fishing and aquaculture, it's in my blood, so it's always something I was going to do.
So Mary, you said you were working as an architectural technician when the last recession hit and you had to make a career change.
At the time, I was into my gardening, so I used to go out and have to buy an imported product. And God, it used to drive me insane because it was this imported product. And I'm from Wexford and I'm surrounded by seaweed all around on the beaches. And so I decided, do you know what? I'm going to go and make my own. So anyhow, I began to research different seaweed types and seaweed processing methods and so on. And I began to, I developed my brand, Ocean Leaves, and began to sell it to the garden centres in 2015. Then in around 2016-2017, Brian O'Loan of BIM approached me and asked me if I would be interested in doing the HDIP course, and then he explained to me that it was a level 8 course and the benefits of doing the course and so on. And I realised, you know, do you know what? I really need to do this course because it will actually help me, you know, in relation to financial planning, strategic planning and so on, you know, marketing and regulatory compliance and so on, and I really needed to do it. So I was absolutely thrilled to be awarded the very first Joey Murren Memorial Medal in 2018.
That's fantastic. And what type of seaweed then are you using for your business?
Fucus fasciculosus and Ascophyllum nodosum. And the one that we use in our seaweed fertilisers would be Ascophyllum nodosum, which is the knotted rack. But probably one of the easiest ones to harvest would be the Ascophyllum nodosum. And so, yes, I mean, the seaweed that we use, like, would be all hand harvested. We don't use any kind of mechanical harvesting whatsoever. And the seaweed would be harvested in such a way like that you would leave a certain amount of the plant growing under rocks so that it regenerates.
And Kate, you were then the BIM student of the year.
But during the same years doing the course, I also participated in things like the Young Entrepreneur of the Year competition, and I won the Wicklow Award for that. And the overall one and then the regional one, and I was in the national final for that, and I did the Student Entrepreneur of the Year as well on behalf of IT Carlo while I was doing that course, and a few others as well, Bank of Ireland awards and different things for my company, Irish Muscle Seed Company, which is going to be operational in 2020. So I think the BIM award is probably one that's based on something that's more all-encompassing than just the course, but yeah, it was lovely to have that award.
So what did you get out of the course that you mightn't have if you hadn't done it?
I suppose one of the main things I actually learned was actually in relation to the learning about the other industries within the sector. I mean, up till then, I would know my seaweed industry, but I wouldn't have known nothing about fisheries and aquaculture overall. You know, so to me, from that was the biggest thing I got from it, really. Yeah. And obviously, in relation to, I mean, we had a barrister teaching us law, which was amazing. I mean, where do you get that except in Wexford campus?
In terms of what I got from the course, was outside of what Mary had mentioned, which is a real practical understanding of all of the different types of businesses within aquaculture and fishing, the problems that they go through. But more than that, for me as an entrepreneur, it was more about inspiration. So during the course, there was an awful lot of conversation between the people who were on the course and the lecturers, and the people that Dick Bates and others will have asked to come in and speak with us from industry. And the conversation was generally around aquaculture licensing and the issues people had faced. And because I had applied for a license myself, I understood it in depth, obviously. And when I finished with the course, I set up AquaLicense, which actually specialises in aquaculture licensing. And gives support to the industry as it tries to grow in a sustainable way. So actually we have developed tech which would indicate the most appropriate sites for particular types of aquaculture globally. And we support then that site selection with environmental impact assessment reports as required and the aquaculture licensing itself and engaging socially in terms of licenses so that companies can make sure that they're taking into account everything they need to when they apply for a license, which is complex in itself.
Are you developing export markets then for your product?
We do at the moment sell into Northern Ireland and a small amount into the UK as well. Now, we have been concentrating mainly on Ireland. Up to now, like, we sell our Ocean Leaf products to over 170 different individual garden centres, as well as Glanbia's Country Life stores. This year coming now, we are hoping that we're going to get into the like of Homeland and Woodies, we hope. Fingers crossed. Long term, I would like to see more seaweed farms, and that's where the aqua licenses would come in as well, because to be able to hand harvest the natural seaweed, it's a 4-year license, but in order to grow the seaweed, you would actually need an aquaculture license, which is a lot harder to get, and that's where Kate comes in.
It is coming more to the East Coast than it had done, not very quickly obviously, because licensing takes such a long time, but hopefully we'll see similar farms here on the East Coast, because the opportunity to farm seaweed or shellfish or anything exists on the East Coast just as much as it does on the West. It's just that traditionally that's where it had established itself first in Ireland. And I'm hoping that, you know, new entrants and businesses are going to take up that opportunity to increase the aquaculture production from Ireland, because we've got to. I think there's an awful lot of concern about the way that it develops. But, you know, as long as we're developing in a very sustainable way, taking care of the environment, you know, we have to increase production of protein by 2050 by 73%. And to do that, you have to increase aquaculture, because our capture fisheries just can't handle that quantity. And obviously, then you have the carbon emissions from particular types of agriculture. But at the same, in saying that, agriculture is extremely important as well, and they are working to reduce their carbon emissions, as all industry is. But, you know, increasing protein production it's just so important for the human race. By 2050, there just won't be enough.
Another problem really at the moment, like, is that there's a huge amount of courses catering for agriculture and agribusiness, but there, up till now, there's been absolutely no third level courses to cater for aquaculture and for seafood industries. So, I mean, Wexford campus IT Carlow supporting this course is absolutely fantastic, and it will drive the industry a bit forward as well.
One of the best things on the course actually was that we were asked to devise a seafood-based idea around a business. Mm. And you take it from your initial concept right through to having a full business plan done, all of your financials completed, understanding what's coming down the line for that business, mitigating the issues that you might come across. And then you pitch your idea, which in business is exactly what you do. So on that course, you come away from it having a real practical understanding of, if I wanted to enter the seafood industry, how would I do that? And what would get me to a place where my business could be successful, which is, an amazing opportunity for anybody if they wanted to go into business.
I mean, I was absolutely blessed, like, to be from Wexford, so I only had to go up the road to do the course. But people come from all around the whole country to do the course. It's a fantastic venue. It's a small course. So, the standard of lectures on it is amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to find a course anywhere else in the whole of Ireland.
And the one thing that I will say is that it's the type of course that you can do and know afterwards that you could go into an industry and work. A lot of the time students now, they go to college. I know, I study law first. You go to college, you have no idea what you want to do. And you come out and you realise, actually, I have to do another 2-year course before I can work. In this course, you can come out of that setting up your own business or working for a business with a deep understanding of what their needs are and how you can meet them. So it's a fabulous course to do if you actually really want to work.
You can actually complete all the modules in 1 year. And when we did it in 2017, 2018, we had to complete all the modules in 1 year. Yeah. However, now you can actually do individual modules. So you can decide whether you do 1 or 2 modules, whatever the case may be. Each module is actually 50% funded by BIM, which is, like, that's fantastic.
The one thing that I did notice very much though with the course is we were all working at the time.
Yes.
And they really facilitated that, understanding that, you know, the industry is working and what their needs are, and the course met us where we were at. They facilitate you, so it's interview based about whether you get placed on the course or not. And you don't have to have that a large educational background to be accepted onto the course. So really it facilitates everybody.
And you can find details of the Higher Diploma in Aqua Business on the IT Carlow website or from BIM. Thanks to Lorna Siggins and to graduates Kate Dempsey and Mary Myler. And this weekend our thoughts here on Seascapes are with the families of Joe Sinnott and Willie Whelan, who were lost this week when their fishing boat the Elise went down off Kilmore Quay. For the past while, we've been dipping into a book, At the Water's Edge, by the late Timmy Flavin. It recounts his journey around Ireland by kayak in the early 1990s and has been published recently by his wife, Breed O'Farrell. In this, our last extract from the book, Brian Lally tells of the difficult traverse of the north of the country.
Day 23, 2nd of June, Roxtown. Arose around 6:30. Very bad day. High wind, white water, cold rain. Have a big breakfast. Hands are very sore and tender for both of us. Fergus has bought us cream to soothe the tenderness. Weather too bad to make a move. Go back to tent. Weatherwise, a bad day, but thanks to our company, who bring us touring across Mallon to check the weather station and the radio station. Out to the tip of Mallon for a mighty day exploring a small rocky island. Loads of birds' nests, eggs, chicks. Shot loads of film. Did a small route to get back to mainland. Enjoyable, but tricky. Back at base, our company again cooked us up a huge meal. Fruit, salad starter, barbecue meat, loads of vegetables, potatoes, strawberry flan, coffee, cheese, toast, crackers, wine, port, and a bonfire. A mighty evening, but we couldn't stay up late. Day 24, 3rd of June, Roxtown to Mallon. On the water at 9:20. Seen off by all the gang. It was really thoughtful of them to give over their long weekend to catering for us. It was hard for us to leave them and all the comforts they provided. We were caught in a flow that swept us into huge water. We had to swing around and paddle back, our first time retracing any of our route, and not as easy as it is to write about it. A big wall of water built up around us. A wave would catch us and hurtle us forward to plough into the back of a previous wave and stop us dead. Sometimes I would be lifted over 20 feet above Donal and vice versa to run down the wave. It was horrible to look back and up and see a wave coming over you about to break. When the wave did not break, you had corrected for it and tried to do a balancing act while waiting for the run of an incoming one. A long 20 minutes later, we made shelter. Our escape was due more to the boat's ability in big water and less to our experience. We got in about 12:15. Even on making good shelter, we were both caught in a small break and nearly hit each other. The boat damage would have been serious. So we arrived safely under Malin Head, but had not passed it. Day 25, 4th of June 91, Malin to Giant's Causeway. The fishermen told us to be at the corner of Malin around 7 o'clock. They were spot on. We were able to paddle through a rock group that we couldn't get within 100 metres of yesterday. The water was unsettled, still the sign of the storm passed. It was uncomfortable, wet paddling. Lots of support strokes, lots of spray, but we made it. We were well pleased with our day. Tides were of great help, but the knowledge of those three fishermen was our main success. They really put us right on crossing Malin. Cooked up curry, far too spicy, had to eat bread while walking to the hotel for water. Cliffs are splendid. It's about 11:30 at night now. We are tired and an early start is unlikely. We are also under a cliff facing west. We will have no sun for our wet gear in the morning. Our landing was a boulder beach. This is much more time consuming than a strand or a slipway, as boat hauling is difficult. Every step must be watched. Boulders are greasy. By the time the tent is up, meal organised, clothes laid out to dry some, there is no time for exploring. Day 27, Thursday 6th of June, Garden Point to Ballywalter. The paddling is no longer interesting. No scenic views, just dull, boring, repetitive work. Rise early, quick breakfast, get as much paddling as possible. Fast food stops, more boring paddling. Pull in somewhere, get changed, set tent, start cooking, sleep. I am now writing these pages the following morning, as I am too tired each night. Medically, we're holding our own. I am using the socks as mitts all the time. Hands neither improving nor disimproving where covered. The backs of fingers are cut and burned by both of us. Blisters still on fingers, the hands are stiff and delicate for any work. Small cuts do not heal. Packing clothes into the hatches is painful if we rub a hand or a finger against the edge. Is it worth all this? Numbness and a type of pins and needles frequently. Day 28, Friday, June 7, Ballywalter to Annalong. We made good distance and ended up doing Dundrum Bay as an open crossing, passing Annalong and pulling in near a caravan park. Walked 2 miles to town for food and phone calls. A very helpful girl went to the trouble of phoning hotels for us to check if the restaurants were open, but without success. We ended up in a good sit-down takeaway. A late night back to the tent for a mint chocolate. An excellent day. Day 29, June 8th, and along to Dunaney Point. Rounding the point and into Dundalk Bay, we hit serious wind and water. It is a shock. We are expecting a handy crossing of the bay, but are nearly being blown backwards. The crossing should take 2 hours, but 3 hours later we're still fighting hard and making no progress. Eventually we cut across the wind and make shore short of the head. We are devastated. We are cold and wet. The wind is blowing hard, rain is falling and the tide is out. We have a long haul of the boats up a sandy beach, then over mussel beds, boulders and more sand. A local couple invite us in for tea. Later we sort our gear and they take us back in for a meal, bring us to a public phone and back to the house for a drink.
At the Water's Edge is for sale in selected bookshops in Cork and Kerry, or you can contact Breda Farrell at iCloud.com to get a copy. That book brought us on a unique trip around Ireland's beautiful coastline. A regular contributor, Hugh Oram, has been looking at one of the groups whose aim is to protect that coast.
The main organisation that's battling to preserve the integrity of our marine environment is the Coastal Concern Alliance, set up close on 15 years ago in 2006. It was started because a group of concerned activists found out that permission had been granted to build what were then two of the largest offshore wind farms in the world. According to Valerie Freeman of the Alliance, the plans were for 420 turbines all along the coastline of County Wicklow and all close to shore. Valerie adds that the group of people involved in setting up the alliance wanted to find out how permission could have been given for these two huge developments under the radar of public attention. She adds that when they became aware of the 1933 Foreshore Act, they also decided that the Coastal Concern Alliance should come into being immediately to begin campaigning for the reform of that particular piece of legislation. The prime movers in setting up the alliance in 2006 were few environmentally conscious individuals representing a range of interests, and this small group was responsible for bringing Coastal Concern Alliance into being. Today, those behind the alliance are essentially similar in interests to the small number of people who began the group. Valerie Freeman adds that over the years, they've had input from a range of interested people who have brought expertise and additional disciplines, but she goes on, everyone involved in the group has shared their concern for environmental protection of our marine environment and the democratic process. The vast majority of the Alliance's work is done on a totally voluntary basis. The Alliance has no affiliation to any political party or to any industry group, and funding comes entirely from members themselves. Valerie explains that they've had two main objectives over the years. The first has been the reform of the 1933 Foreshore Act, and the second is to see the introduction of marine, spatial, planning and integrated coastal zone management. However, she adds, we've become aware over the years that the issues impacting the coast are much broader than just the legislative framework governing development. And in particular, we've taken an interest in other environmental issues and the protection of nature, including biodiversity, ecosystems and species. The Alliance liaises closely with other organisations working in the same marine area. And over the years, there have been contacts with many environmental NGOs, and members of the Alliance have attended their conferences and met up with their officers. There's been close cooperation in the sharing of ideas and information, and in general, seamless liaison in all the efforts to protect the coastal environment. But Coastal Concern Alliance doesn't have any specific links to the fishing industry. At the moment, the legislation to replace the Foreshore Act, the planned Marine Planning and Development Management Bill, remains in draft form, with the final draft expected any time now. So far, however, the Alliance hasn't made any formal assessment of this new bill. And while the draft National Marine Planning Framework is now in print, the Coastal Concern Alliance won't be making a formal response until early in 2020. However, Valerie Freeman says that one area of concern they do have is that once the legislation is passed, the government will have the power to designate strategic activity zones, which will form part of the Marine Planning Framework. She says that their concern is that this power will be used to rubber stamp wind farm developments that are being progressed under legislation that is unfit for purpose and is non-compliant with EU legislation and regulation. If this happens, developers will be able to lay claim to vast areas of the Irish nearshore coastline without proper oversight or democratic input from the people to whom the coast belongs, the citizens of Ireland. The unspoiled Irish coastline and its seascapes will be altered irreparably. The present government has done a lot to advance reform of foreshore legislation and marine spatial planning. But since the Alliance believes that development still outweighs conservation, that balance needs to be reversed. The size of the offshore waters controlled by Ireland are vast, three times the size of Germany. But the Alliance says that the size and scale of wind farm developments proposed off the south and east coasts of Ireland wouldn't be permitted in Germany or most other EU countries. And for almost 15 years now, says Valerie Freeman, the Alliance has been the only citizens group campaigning on these areas of concern. She says that in many cases they have been heard, for instance making a presentation to the Joint Oireachtas Committee reforming the foreshore legislation. She concludes, "Perhaps our greatest achievement is having had the determination and tenacity to keep going over the years. We continue to fight for democracy and for the protection and preservation and protection of our beautiful seascapes, marine habitats and species. It's an ongoing battle for the Coastal Concern Alliance and one without any end in sight."
Hugh Oram.